Welcome to Michigan HockeyCast 2.3, where we are back by popular demand, and we have a special guest star. Welcome to the MGO blog. Signing day football podcast. Oh, I'm on the wrong notes. Okay, wait. This is actually HockeyCast 2.3. Oh, that's why, because I'm joined by Anthony Ciotti. Anthony, you're back in town.
I am back.
That's good.
I didn't actually leave town.
Well, we put you in the closet here. The one time, and then we didn't unpack you the second time, because Adam was here, and we were talking, and we couldn't find you.
But I've been in town. I didn't go anywhere.
Well, maybe I'll have to check my Rolodex. Maybe that's the problem.
I hang out with you like once a week.
We do that.
You know sometimes. I haven't left.
Okay. I'm sorry. I will be more vigilant next time. So Anthony's back, and I also invited a special guest to join us today. Her name is Bailey Johnson. She writes for The Daily, has covered the Michigan hockey team for a couple years, has saved my butt a number of times with hockey shot charts and giving me line info and little things that she has a little better access to than I have availability, if we can call it that. So, Bailey, how are you doing?
Good. How are y'all?
We're doing all right. Y'all.
I get to see a lot of what you send David as well, so I thank you.
Y'all is important because you are from Georgia, around Atlanta?
I'm from Atlanta, yeah.
I've lived, I'll say too long of my life in Atlanta. But
I had family in Alpharetta as well.
In Alpharetta?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like Atlanta.
Yeah, I've lived out in sort of the edges of Gwinnett County.
Were you a Thrashers fan then?
I was not. I wasn't into hockey before I came up here.
Okay. You weren't into hockey up here? Or before you got up here?
No, not at all.
But I believe I read that you said it's like your favorite sport.
It is now, but I'd been to one hockey game before I started covering the team.
Okay. And then you just fell in love with it the past couple of years?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So we'll start this. It's been probably 5 or so weeks since we've done one of these. We've actually gotten some people tweeted at me about like, hey, when are we going to do a hockey cast? So we have a couple fans.
Thank you.
Exactly. So the last time we did a podcast, Michigan had just played Ohio State, and it was a little disappointing because we thought they played pretty well and didn't even get a point in that series, which ended up kind of becoming a theme throughout the first half. But it was disappointing because they had a 2-goal lead in one game. They played better, I thought, defensively. Man has played well, and then they didn't get a point. So we kind of previewed the Minnesota series. A little nervous because they get Bob Motzko. He's coming in after redoing the entire St. Cloud State program. And are they going to get run out of Yost because now he finally has a year or more under his belt? But that doesn't necessarily happen. They hold serve for the most part, but again, can't really get a win there. Do you have any thoughts on any of that Minnesota series or on the team as to like what happened? It seemed like they played pretty well, just didn't get a result.
I mean, yeah, that's basically what I would say is the same story in all these other series we're going to talk about. They played okay, didn't get outplayed, stayed with them the first night they tied and lost in double overtime, lost the extra point, and they just couldn't find the back of the net, which has sort of been the theme.
Yeah, I have their Corsi written down, and it's like significantly in favor of Michigan both nights.
Yeah, I think that we're kind of seeing a theme, as you know, as we were talking about before, where they're not, you know, they're in every game, they're leading some of the games, and you know, it's just a matter of kind of getting over that hump.
Yeah, so they got a point in that series. Next up was Michigan State. They came out blistering, I thought, on Friday night, jumped to, I believe they were up 3-1, mid-second. It looked like kind of an old-fashioned State beating that we've been kind of accustomed to at Yost over the years, especially in the last 10 years or so that Michigan State's been down. But Michigan State rebounded really well in that game. I thought Michigan got a little sloppy and maybe started looking ahead, and then the roof kind of caved in, and before you knew it, they had lost that game 4-3. Again, at Yost to State, which has happened enough the past couple years.
I remember that game and thinking about how bad Michigan State looked.
Just like, during the game?
Yeah, just like, oh my gosh, this team is horrible. And I think that you're right. I think Michigan kind of got a little bit too comfortable in that sense. And Michigan State's good enough just good enough to come back and make something out of that game. But yeah, for a long time, Michigan was clearly the better team. And Michigan State didn't look like they had much. and just kind of fell apart.
Yeah, it definitely fell apart. We talked to Nick Blankenberg after that game, and basically all he had to say was that they let off the gas and that it was unacceptable. And then they came out two nights later and lost 3-0. So.
Yeah, that one was another one. And again, I thought they sort of outplayed them from a shooting perspective, and they had chances again. But it's like all their chances end up like in somebody's chest. Like, you remember our buddy Teddy used to play a bunch of hockey, and Anthony and I always give him a hard time because he was really fast, and he'd get down the ice, and he'd just bury great chances in goalies' chests. And we used to tease him all the time, calling it a Teddy shot. And we'll still
we'd always say, wow, that goalie has such a fast chest.
And it just kind of seems like that happens. Like, because they do get decent chances, and I thought they got decent chances in that game up in East Lansing, but again, everything hits a chest, or it hits a blocker, and you're just like, why can't this go in the net?
Yeah, and I don't think they know why it can't go in the net either. They've been really frustrated. They've been telling us all season that they're frustrated, but that it's going to come, and it kind of hasn't.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah. So then they go out to New Hampshire. This was, I believe, Indiana weekend right before Thanksgiving, and they actually somehow get a win. I remember I had to pay like $10 to watch this game, and we set it up on a TV downstairs, and they actually won a game, and it was like, whoa, hey, I forgot what this feels like almost. But that was a game that was pretty 50-50, but they kind of pulled away at the end, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, they pulled away at the end. Beecher hit the empty net late, and they spent almost the entire third period in the defensive zone, but Strauss played really well and kept them in it, and ended up getting the win that night.
And the next night, I thought they played well too. Had multiple one-goal leads, which isn't a ton, obviously. But they got a goal early, gave it up, got another goal, and had a chance. And then, as has occurred too often this year, gave up a couple, including one sort of late in the third. And then that was it.
Yeah, they gave up the tying goal late in the third. And then they took it to overtime. And like it happened earlier in the game, I don't remember if it was the tying goal or if it was a goal earlier. But one of the defensemen turned it over in the zone right to one of New Hampshire's absolute best players.
Right. That's right.
He was 1-on-0 with Hayden, and Hayden did not have a chance.
So that's interesting. Levine started that game, and that's his only start of the year.
His only start of the year. It was very surprising when they went with him because I thought Strauss had played really, really well the night before. Mm-hmm. Mel said after that Hayden had kind of earned a chance to play because they put him in East Lansing after they pulled Strauss.
Right, down. And that was early, right?
Yeah, it was like halfway through the second period, I think. Yeah. They pulled him. Mm-hmm. So Mel said Hayden had earned a chance to play, and he did look pretty good. It's hard to overcome your defense giving up turnovers like that, but I think Strauss should be the guy they're riding, and they've shown that since then.
So, yeah, Anthony, you play a lot of goalie. Like, what is it
too
like?
Too much, actually.
So what is it like then when you have – you're like a backup goalie, but maybe playing okay in practice, and things aren't, like Bailey said, not necessarily your fault, but you need some ice time at some point, right? Like, how do you balance that?
Well, I think that it is good to get Levine a game, right? Like, because if something happens, like, he's going to have to go in.
Right.
You know, and so there was a good opportunity. It was the second half on the road series, you know, and it's a non-conference opponent as well. Like,
yeah,
you know,
that's
so
kinda big.
Like, it's a little bit lower risk. And because it is a risk if you haven't played a guy in like 2 months.
Have no idea.
Exactly.
Walk out of the ice.
There's a lot of rust involved there. If you're skating every day, like, game situations are different. So it's probably a really safe place to give him a game, you know, and like, he had obviously earned it. And he's proven before, like, he's played a lot for Michigan. So it made a ton of sense, but you do have to keep guys warm a little bit. Like, I mean, you can, like, back in the day, like the Turco Shields days, like those guys played every single game.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a different time now, you know? And so, like, especially with load and, you know, back to backs and stuff like that, you have to keep a guy fresh. And there's not nearly as many games in college, but still, like, it's a smart thing to give him a game, you know?
And
he'll probably get another one at some point too, you know?
The interesting thing for me is that, you know, he was, well, the last 2 years, they've kind of been split starters for the first half, and he's, quote-unquote, sort of won the job the second half of the year, and then now, like, kind of had a not great end to his season. Mann comes in, plays that playoff series, and plays well despite giving up a lot of goals, because, again, we have defensive issues.
Not a lot of help, yeah.
No, and then one of the talking points coming into the year was, how good is Mann going to be? Because if he's going to be good, this team has a shot. If we're going to get the goaltending we did last year, you know, you don't really know. Mm-hmm. And Mann just kind of blows onto the scene, looks as good as we've seen a Michigan goalie look since probably Hunwick and maybe before. So, like, that's got to be difficult for Levine to manage too, because now he's going into a senior year having to just be like, all right, I'm – like the hole plugger here. I'm when they need something, but you know, I'm not the guy that's being relied upon.
But I think it speaks a lot to how well Strauss Mann has played, right? Where he hasn't really given up the spot, you know, and so he's been borderline elite, you know, kept Michigan in every game, like kept them afloat through like some bad stretches. He's also been able to, like, you know, Michigan, when they're playing really well and, you know, he's not seeing a ton of shots, like he's able to make those saves too. Like he's done really well for them in like all situations. He's not let in a lot of soft goals. Like I can't think of any really. Like he's been extremely solid. Like he's all you could really expect. Like it's best case scenario, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. I think he's been really, really good. And they also seem to really like want to play well in front of him. Mm-hmm. Like we've seen a couple of times where he's had a shutout late and there's a loose puck in the crease and everybody just crashes the net to try to preserve that shutout for him. And I think that's really important that like if you have your guy in the net like and you want to win for him, like I think that's valuable to the team.
Yeah, you got to have his back.
Well, in addition, when you're having trouble putting the puck in the other net, like you can't give up many. And so right. It's good to have people crashing back and clearing pucks out. Because I think that like when we first started doing this, Michigan's defense was all over the place. And that's part of what inspired us to kind of start looking deeper into this stuff a few years ago. And one of the issues, and you even brought this up a number of times, is back checking by like wingers and centers getting back and clearing pucks out of the out of the center of the ice. And we don't really have those issues anymore.
Well, another thing is shots and scoring chances created off of like turnovers.
Yeah.
And I don't think Michigan's turning the puck over in bad spots as much anymore. Like it's going to happen. Like it happens sometimes, sure. Especially on the breakout, but by and large, they've cleaned a lot of that up this year. You know, I think you're seeing that and also better responsibility from like all positions.
So
better coverage as well in zone.
Yes.
But that was really never a huge problem for them anyway. Like they were usually pretty decent, like on in zone coverage. Things would go sideways when, you know, a play broke down or off of a turnover or something. And so I think overall, like they've cleaned a lot of that up.
So we've kind of stalled out a little bit. We have a couple more series to get to. One of them is the Wisconsin series, which the last couple of years has been difficult for Michigan going up there. They went 0-4 in Madison last year, basically the last four games of their season. And Wisconsin came in with, what, two first-round picks, one of the best goal scorers in the under-18 or in, like, the U.S. in the last 10 years or so. I think that, Bailey, you and I were kind of talking about this.
Yeah, broke all the records at the program. He's probably one of the best goal scorers out of there since Patrick Kane. Like, he's unbelievable.
And so you kind of come into this being like, uh-oh, like, I hope we can do something. And they play, I thought, really well the first night. I guess it was Saturday. That was not a good day for other reasons, but they had a two-goal lead again and let that kind of slip away, gave up some goals late, and lost that one. And then Sunday, that was the one they actually held on for, got a lead again, and this time held it and ended up winning 3-1. So they get a split in Madison, which I think probably going in, generally speaking, in those situations, you're pretty comfortable with.
I think a split on the road is good, you know, especially against a team with that much skill. It's fourth first rounders too. Holloway,
wait,
Miller.
They have four?
Yeah, Holloway, jeez. Miller, Caulfield, and Turcotte, right? So
Holloway will be a first rounder. Yeah. Miller was 2 years ago, and then
He's the Caulfield. Guy that you were really into a couple of years ago, the defenseman.
Kendry Miller looks awesome. He looked awesome in the World Junior Summer Showcase this summer. A couple of the Wisconsin games I've watched, he hasn't looked as good, you know, I think, but I'm looking forward to watching him in the World Juniors.
Yeah.
He looked phenomenal this summer.
So they get that split, and you're thinking, okay, that's nice, and then they come back for one more series at Yost, and it's Penn State who, Penn State has been like that team for the last, what, 3 or 4 years where you're like, oh, they're going to score six goals a game, but they might give up eight. And it's always been, oh no, you don't want to run into this buzzsaw, and then you play them, and they pass the puck into their own net, and their goalie is facing the wrong direction. And I think we characterized them last year as hockey's version of Oklahoma football, where they're just going to blow up and score a ton, and but you never know what happens at the other end. And they high event hockey. Okay, and they look better this year a little bit. They've kind of toned down some of the defensive issues. Bailey was mentioning in prep that Peyton Jones looks like one of the best goalies.
He's got a click
this year.
He's been really, really strong.
I also think they have a little bit more experience on defense now. You know, okay, like, I think they're a little bit more solid.
So gotten older and everything.
Yeah,
and Michigan kind of pounds them in the first game. I remember you were writing about that one. I missed that game. I watched on TV, but that was probably the most exciting game at Yost this year.
Yeah, it was a really, really strong game. They looked good at every level. I don't think they got a power play goal, but actually they did, I think, that night get a power play goal. Either way, like, they were strong at every level of the game. Offense was working. Defense was working. Strauss was great. They absolutely could have shut him out. There's one, like, goal off the rush late for Penn State, mm-hmm. but Michigan had the number absolutely all night.
And so with that win, I don't think that Penn State had won at Yost in 4 years.
It was like
say.
A 10-game losing streak, I think.
Yeah, which is crazy wow. given how good that program has, I guess, kind of become.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then they play Saturday and give up two goals near the end of the first period. One was a power play goal. It was just a really nice goal. The other one was, I thought, a miscommunication near the blue line. And I think it was Evan Barrett, mm-hmm. who Anthony was saying in prep needs to be in. He played professionally.
To go pro.
He's good enough.
It's about time.
And Michigan just can't quite overcome it again. They get a ton of opportunities to their top mm-hmm. line guys. But once again, they just keep hitting goalies' chests. They hit posts, they have opportunities, pucks just trickle wide, mm-hmm. and but I was actually weirdly encouraged by that game because I thought that they played really well against, for the second straight game, against a really good opponent, mm-hmm. and didn't get plural game points in that series, but played well enough probably to.
Yeah, they definitely did. Like, I thought they should have come out of that game, not maybe not with the win, but at least taken it to, like, overtime and done some things,
yeah.
gotten it tied up late because they were really pressuring and looked like they were going to get that next goal. And that game really came down to just those couple minutes at the end of the first because the rest of it, I thought Michigan outplayed them. They just, I mean, you're going to give up a goal to Penn State's power play. They have the best power play in the nation. And then
yeah.
a miscommunication after that. But, like, otherwise, I thought Michigan looked really, really strong.
And didn't Mike Pasta, like, miss sort of an open net or, like...
Yeah, it was late in the game. They'd pulled Strauss, and Mike got a... He was at the bottom of the circle. He got a pass from behind the net, and he, like, shot it super quick, and somehow... Peyton Jones was laying down, and somehow he, like, got his arm up and, like, just barely got a piece of it.
And that's, like, just feels like it's indicative of Michigan season, where even when they get good shots, they either miss the net or, like, the guy reaches his hand out from the middle of the ice, and you're like, how in the world? So... It's a little bit frustrating. It seemed to end a little better than it started.
Yes.
I guess.
Even if they're just splitting, it still looks like they're a little bit closer.
You know,
like the games are a little bit better. They're playing better overall. Part of the issues earlier with blowing the leads where they weren't finishing games as well, you know, and it looks like they're getting a little bit closer.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little more 60-minute effort. So, yeah, the last two weekends were much more promising.
And Bailey, you were kind of talking a little bit when we were prepping for this a little bit, how it just seems like they're a little unlucky.
Yeah, they definitely are a little bit unlucky. There's actually, I wrote a good, bad, and ugly sort of breakdown of the first half last week for the Daily, and there's this guy on Twitter who charts Corsi versus PDO, which mm-hmm. essentially measures luck, mm-hmm. and Michigan is above average in Corsi and a little bit below average in PDO, like pretty close to average, but like... The numbers show that they're a little bit unlucky. Not maybe enough to reflect how bad the offense has been, but there's certainly some degree of it that's coming from the fact that they've been a little unlucky.
I think that because their goaltending is probably above average, so a lot of that like lack of luck is shooting luck.
Yeah, it absolutely
is. Super low. I bet their shooting percentage is really low.
They have, last I looked, they had like the 58th ranked shooting percentage in the country. Like,
right.
I'm pulling it up right now.
So some of that normal.
Yeah, 6.7% shooting, 58th in the country.
Yeah.
And they do, the thing is, I mean, they're not Penn State when they shoot, where mm-hmm. Penn State crosses the blue line and is just looking for anything. But Michigan does shoot from everywhere. Mm-hmm. They do just want to get chances on net. I don't think that's like a talent thing. I think that's a Mel thing of where right. you just want as many chances to score, even if mm-hmm. the opportunities aren't the greatest.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So I think that there is a little bit of a component where they're not going to get to 10% shooting just because of the style of play.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're doing a little bit more low risk. So last year we saw a lot of shots from the corner of the point.
Yes.
You know, like low percentage, hoping to bounce and get in. This year, I think we're seeing a little bit of that, but they're also seeing like different things off the rush, which are a little bit lower risk. So they go wide off the rush a lot and try to dump it into the middle. And, you know, you're just preventing like chances against the other way in a lot of sense. So you're not probably going to get to 10% because you're not taking the same amount of high percent shots in that sense, and you're like loading up from like weird angles and like outside of the, you know, a house or whatever. But I mean, what, 6% you said?
6.7.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's going to be a little bit of a little bit of elasticity there. Probably get like, should get to like 8.5, 9, you know, but yeah, trying to get to like 10 or 11 is probably, like I said, just because it's a systematic thing.
When you're just taking such a high volume.
Right. Yeah. Right. And, you know, it's by design to take the low percentage because, like I said, you're giving up less the other way. And, you know, I think in a lot of theory, most of the time you're shooting against, like, the theory I've always thought is like, hey, you're shooting against a college goalie. Like, it's okay.
You know?
Now, in this sense, as we were talking earlier, like, this conference right now has some really good goaltending. Like, most of the teams have at least one good goalie, in some cases, two. And so you're not going to get those bounces as much against, like, higher-end goalies. So, you know, I think it's a little bit of luck there too.
So before we get on to the next segment, I think we should just kind of go through some of the overall, we kind of touched on some of this, but some of the takeaways from this half of the season. Obviously, we talked about they can't score goals and, you know, they're maybe a little unlucky. You were talking about Mann, and both of you actually were talking about Stauskas Mann, and he's played phenomenally. Like, even if you look at his numbers, I think I found like his GAA is like 2.06 and his save percentage is somewhere around 93. Which, jeez, those are all, I mean, those are both too really elite. Good numbers, yeah, right? Like, yeah. And even when you just watch him with the eye test, like, he doesn't leave a lot of rebounds. He tracks the puck really well. You were talking about how goals that beat him generally aren't his fault. He doesn't give up, like, goals, like, under the arm or just, like, not having his pads in the right position. It's, you have to beat him, you actually have to beat him. And, I mean, you said, this is kind of best case scenario for Michigan.
Yeah, so, I mean, going into the season, we thought, like, if they got good goaltending, you know, they'd be, like, basically a tournament team, and I think that they've gotten better than good goaltending. I mean, yeah, probably best-case scenario, like you said, like, the best stretch of goaltending they've gotten since some of the Racine half years, where Racine was awesome down the stretch.
Oh, yeah.
Or that one Nagelvoort season where he was lights out.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the Hunwick seasons. But, you know, they're getting, like, elite goaltending, and he's helped them in all situations, as we were talking about a little bit earlier, where it's not just, you know, when they're getting dominated, it's when he's standing around for 10 minutes and then he catches a bad break, you know, and like he's making those saves too. And that's a tough thing for a goalie. So he's answered the call pretty much in all situations. And, you know, he's been really consistent all around. I think that's kind of boosted their PDO a little bit, like, but you know, I think the bad luck's been on the shooting end. So I think that if he can continue to be really elite, you know, I think there's a really good opportunity for growth in the second half for the team, like a little bit more success.
Yeah, if they just get a few more bounces.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's basically like they're, in a lot of these games, they've been a couple bounces away from getting a win or not letting in a goal that goes off your skate and that kind of thing. So they're right there.
Because we just talked through pretty much the entire Big Ten season. And, I mean, they didn't get housed in any game that I can remember. Like, they've been in every game. I mean, I remember a couple games last year where, like, Notre Dame beat them by, like, 3 or 4 goals. Mm-hmm. But in these situations, they're within a bounce or two.
Right.
And even when they're playing like on the road or against good teams, they're still right there.
Yeah, so I think there's been a little bit more consistency in the, I would say, effort. Like, I mean, they're finishing games. There's no quit ever this year. Like, yeah, even when things aren't going well, they stick through it. Like, there's, you know, they can pull themselves out of a bad stretch. Teams are going to have bad stretches for 10 or 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to have bad periods. They're going to have bad two-period stretches. Like, it happens.
Yeah.
But they've never really – things have never gone off the rails this year. Like, they've – you know, most of the games, like, they've been in – it's been close. You know, they'll make a mistake here or there, you know, like anyone else does. But it's definitely a little bit more of a complete effort than I think in years past. Like, pretty solid all around.
Yeah, I would agree with that, having seen them last year compared to this year. Like, the effort level the effort level I think has been a lot more consistent. There's just like a sense that they all really want it, and I think last year there were a couple of guys who maybe weren't quite as invested in the team outcome, and I think this year's team is really all bought in. They all really want to win, and they're just kind of hoping for the best.
Let's get back to that in a little bit. I think that's,
yeah, because there's
that's
a process it. There.
Yeah, yeah. And the last thing I want to touch on, you know, and the things that Anthony and I always harp on, and some of this is coaching, some of it is talent, some of it's luck to a certain extent, but the power play has been my sticking point all year, because I said when you're watching this team, I didn't seem like they had great individual goal scoring, but when you're on the power play, you have one extra player on the ice. Mm-hmm. And if you can convert those opportunities, you can become a pretty good team, even without great 5-on-5 scoring. And that has been the part that it looked, I thought, better the last weekend or two. Not necessarily in production, but in the shots you're finding. Because, like, in basketball, what you want to do is manipulate players to get a guy an open shot. So he can knock down an open three or a backdoor cut or something, a good shot. And in hockey, it's not dissimilar. You want to move the puck around, especially on the power play, to get a decent shooter a good look at the net. In moving the goalie or the defense.
Creating space.
If you can, too. And I thought the last couple weeks they've done that. And if you do that enough, it seems like your percentage will go up.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The power play has looked better lately. Mel always says that he doesn't care as much about the percentage as, like, when they get a power play goal, if they can get one when they really need one. Mm-hmm. And I thought Cam York's in the Friday night Penn State game was a really good example of that. Mm-hmm. Like, that was a big goal to get, like, extend the lead and, like, keep things moving in the right direction for them. Mm-hmm. They have had gotten, like, much better opportunities lately. The puck's not going in on the power play, just like it's not going in anywhere else. But I think overall it is looking better. They're looking more settled in their system. They changed things up about a month ago now.
Mm-hmm. That could be key.
I think the changes were noticeable.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Bill Muckelt's been running the power play this year, and they were playing with things at the beginning of the year trying to figure out what was going to work. They moved Cam York from running the point down to working out of the half wall, and I think he looks much more comfortable down there. That top unit is really clicking. The second unit looks good. Mike Pastajov's been putting in really, really solid effort, been looking very good there. So I think they're kind of on the upswing.
Well, that would be a game changer heading into the second half. The other thing that they've improved, probably not as high as what we'd like, but certainly much better than it was a couple years ago, and maybe a little bit than last year, is the penalty kill. And I just remember during that tournament year, they had a decent power play with Marody and Calderon, and whenever they would take a penalty, it was just everybody was holding on to anything that they could because it was
holding on for dear life.
Yeah, because it was pushing down between 70% and 75%, which is just unheard of. And they've gotten it up above 80% now. You'd probably like to see it above 85 or so on average, but it's gotten better. I thought they did a really good job against Penn State, who has one of the better power plays. They gave up the one goal, but there were multiple opportunities that Penn State had where I don't even know if they got an attempt on net.
Yeah, that sounds about right from what I remember. They definitely really shut down Penn State, and Penn State has a really good power play if you hold them to, I think it was 1-for-7 or 1-for-8 on the weekend.
That's like, phenomenal.
You'll take that every single weekend against a power play like that. I think they were at 32% coming in.
Yeah, I remember that. It was over 30.
Yeah, and I think that they've gotten a little bit more aggressive. So last year it was a really small passive penalty kill where it allowed...
Like a box, right?
Yeah, it allowed the other team to have possession. And when you allow that kind of possession, like, things are going to happen. Bad things are usually going to happen because they're going to get the passes they want. They're going to get the lanes they want eventually. Like, that's the whole point, you know, of a good power play that moves the puck. You're going to create space eventually if you're not trying to press mistakes. So they're applying a little bit more pressure. You know, most really successful penalty kills will apply more pressure, especially in sensitive areas, like vulnerable areas where turnovers can be you know, devastating.
And that's an interesting point because they've gotten a couple shorthanded goals. I think
Luke Morgan has two and Garrett Van Wy has one.
And Morgan's have been recent.
Morgan, he had backed, it was
back-to-back, right?
Second Wisconsin game and then first Penn State game, and Van Wy's might have even been the first night in Wisconsin, or maybe it was at New Hampshire. Also recent.
So but it's all within the last few weeks.
All within the last few weeks. They've all been recent. And Chris Mayotte came in this year, obviously, and brought his PK system from Providence, which had one of the best PKs in the nation last year. And I think the guys really like running it. That's what they keep telling us, that they like being aggressive. They like being able to pressure more. They really like the system they're running, and they're starting to figure it out. And Mayotte says they're all asking the right questions and doing the right things to learn it. And they've just been kind of settling into it. And I think that's why we've seen it get even better over the last few weeks.
And with something like that, you can expect it to take a few weeks to a couple months to change based on, like, if you're doing one thing for a while and then trying to not only learn it, but then master it. So it's not unreasonable to think that it could even get better in the second half.
Absolutely. I think it's going to continue to improve.
Well, that's something that they could certainly use, anything to keep pucks out of the net until they can find ways to change the shooting percentage, as we just touched on. So why don't we take a break, and we'll come back, and Bailey has a few insights about maybe some team culture stuff, and we'll get into maybe a couple other things.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
with David Nasternak and Bailey Johnson. Thanks for joining us once again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So first half, we talked about general, like how we've done this season week to week, what the overarching themes are with goaltending, offense, defense. But so we thought since you're here, it might be a good idea to talk about some of the higher level things, like the themes overall, because you're with the team every day. You have a really good finger on the pulse. You do really good work for the daily and you do really great work during the games. And you, obviously you've helped David and I out with some of the some of the sheets when they're on the road and stuff like that. But I think that, you know, the last year or so with the team and the program overall, like it's been pretty consistent, you know, and we feel like they're kind of working on breaking through, like getting over the hump. They're getting closer as it seems. So I think that, you know, I guess the first question I would have is the differences between last year and this year, where the record's worse this year, but we're seeing, you know, they're finishing games a little bit better. They're a little bit more consistent, like front to end. Do you see changes in the team last year to this year that might be pointing in a positive direction?
Absolutely. I think the culture of this team is significantly improved over last year. Will Lockwood at the beginning of the year said to us, like, there's no one in this locker room thinking about their own individual talent. And I think we can all put it together who he might have been talking about from last year's team that was only thinking about his individual talent. His name might be Quinn Hughes. I don't know. And I just think this leadership group is really strong. Will Lockwood loves this team. He came back so he could be the captain and lead this team and leave it better than when he started here. He's a local kid. His dad played here. Like, Michigan has always been his dream. He's kind of said that like when he was growing up and he had to write about a dream that would come true, it was playing hockey at Michigan. It wasn't playing in the NHL. Like, this is always what it's been that he wanted to do. So he takes this very seriously. He feels a lot of responsibility to lead the team in a positive direction. He's always telling us about the positive team talk and building each other up and making sure that everyone like knows how valued they are and how important they are to everything that they're doing. And I think, you know, Jake Slaker's worn an A since he was a sophomore. He's obviously an incredible leader. Luke Martin and Griffin Luce on the back end are great guys who really, really help out the younger defensemen. And I think they're all just working really well in concert and helping the culture a lot.
The interesting thing that I was thinking of when you were talking about it is, like with Lockwood specifically, is we've seen him be a very good forward in terms of, like, not only passing the puck, but finishing goals. And that hasn't really come this year. And you were talking about how maybe he's feeling pressure to lead this team and maybe he has to do almost is trying to do too much by example instead of just maybe playing within himself. Do you think that's kind of what's led to maybe a slow start?
I would definitely say that's something that's led to him. You can see it in every game. He's trying to make like the highlight reel play that gets them the goal, that gets them the lead, instead of maybe like finishing the open pass or like making the simple play because he wants to be the guy that does it and leads them in a positive direction. So I think he's feeling a lot of pressure to like make things happen and get them wins when maybe playing within the system and staying within himself would be more beneficial overall.
And that's something where the break could almost help, where you could just kind of pull out of that kind of stuff because he's not worried about the juniors anymore because he went, I think his first two years. 1 year he got hurt.
He got hurt his sophomore year.
Yeah. And so having maybe a couple weeks to reflect and think about it, it could maybe rejuvenate him in the second half.
So I think that there's you know, an inflection point coming. They have a break. A lot of college teams have like do really good things off of the break. You know, we talked about how Duluth, you know,
North Dakota used to be like that every year, mm-hmm. where they'd have this terrible first half and you're like, finally it's the end of North Dakota, mm-hmm. and then they'd come out and win like 9 of 10 to right. start and you're like, well, here we go again.
Well, there's a lot of time off. There's a lot of time for, you know, improvement, for a little bit of things to be worked on. I think the GLI comes at a really good time because those aren't really great teams they're playing. So it's a good kind of break. Like the schedule works really well. They also get a little bit of a break from hockey. You know, like there's a good thing, and especially with the first half, like they get to take a look and see, you know, what this need to be improved on. The one thing that you brought up that kind of speaks to me is there's more of a sense of ownership. So they have a really experienced group. I think it's the sixth most experienced team in the country. And so you're saying they're taking a lot of ownership, like the process to becoming a really great team and program, like that's a really important step. And it doesn't always mean translate to success immediately, right? Because you get people stressing a little bit too much. You get people trying to do too much. But as long as they stick with it, you know, there's a way to take that next step from there. And like this time right now within the schedule, like is a good time to maybe transition into something a little bit more, you know, creating a little bit more success.
And like what Bailey brought up in the previous segment about the penalty kill, is like they kind of switched it a little bit. You said they were tinkering early. kind of solidified on something, and now you're kind of seeing some of the results that you think could even expound in the second half. And that could be kind of projected onto a number of other areas.
Exactly. I think this break comes at a really good time for them. They probably would have liked one more weekend to maybe get a sweep at the end, and guys like Luke Morgan were starting to heat up and that kind of thing. But I think it comes at a good time. They've been really banged up, which is something that's kind of, I think, impacted them more than we maybe thought it would. They haven't had their whole ideal lineup for, I think they've only had it for 3 games, because Will missed a few games, Slaker missed a few games, York missed a few games.
Yeah, Beecher didn't play a whole lot at the beginning of the season.
Because he got hurt in the first game. He sprained his ankle against Clarkson, and then he missed 4 games after that, or 3 games after that, and then he missed again when he tweaked it. Beecher's missed a couple, and he was hurt at New Hampshire, so he wasn't fully ready to go. So I think that's hampered them a lot. I think the break comes at a good time to get them healthy, sort of absorb everything that's happened in the first half, think about everything that's going well, and come back for the GLI ready to go.
And the GLI, they will probably be missing a couple of players, I would assume, that Beecher and York.
Made the team.
They made it through the first round of cuts. There's still 3 more guys that are going to get cut. Cam is definitely, and I would say Beecher's a little bit more on the borderline, but I would also expect him to be on the team.
Anthony? Yeah.
I think they would. I'm sorry. I thought they had made it, but Well, the World Junior Summer Showcase, Beecher paired really well with Arthur Kaliev, who's probably going to be USA's best player. So I'm wondering if they will just carry that into the World Juniors. And then York had a really firm role, like as a power play guy, and you know, like third pair, like puck mover. So I could see them both probably making it.
Yeah, they've been. I know they had camp in Plymouth Monday, Tuesday. I wasn't there, but I know. They've had Turcotte working with Kaliev, and Beecher was with Bobby Brink the first day, and then yesterday was more like fifth line as they were working. So I'm wondering if he might get bumped off. But York, I think, is in there. They've been working him on the power play. He's only 2001 defenseman still on the team, so I would expect them to keep him.
Yeah, it's a little bit of an older tournament this year.
The interesting thing to me is that the Big Ten season does not pick up until the 10th and 11th, which means that they will not miss the first weekend, which has been the case for as long as I can remember. It seems like I remember when they played Notre Dame to start, I think it was at least last year, if not also the
last year was the outdoor game, and probably I think the year before also.
So yeah. And they missed guys on both of those years, but this year it's only going to be the GLI, which is at least helpful in terms of the conference race.
Yeah. Well, I know last year they went to Ohio State the first weekend after World Juniors. They had the outdoor game, then they played Merrimack midweek, and then they went to Ohio State on the weekend. And Mel likes to give the guys time off. Like, I think he sat Quinn Hughes for maybe one of the Ohio State games to give him a chance to get back in it. So I wouldn't fully expect York and Beecher to be, ready to go that first weekend at Notre Dame, but they'll probably play at least one of the games.
And they'll at least have time to reacclimate to school and everything like that, where coming back from wherever they're going and all that type of stuff. So that's probably a schedule benefit, I would say. And both these games are at Notre Dame. So they start out at Notre Dame, at Penn State in the first 4 games.
Ooh. Yeah.
And so you probably don't have to win all of them, obviously. I mean, you need wins.
Big opportunities, though, for pairwise.
And if they can even get 2 in those first 2 weekends, you're thinking, okay, because then they'll have more home games against teams that they have a better shot at winning, maybe. I don't know. They get Wisconsin later. They get State later. It's a tough beginning, but like you said, we have not seen them get outplayed really by anyone, and we haven't seen Notre Dame yet. But Bailey, you had an interesting insight about them because you were saying that you thought they were not quite as good, and that has proven true in the last few weeks.
Yeah, I at the beginning of the year was not super high on Notre Dame. I didn't know a ton about them, but we saw them a fair amount last year, and I just didn't feel like they were going to be as good as people thought they were going to be. And they had a 7-game winless streak in the last couple of weeks. They just snapped it by shutting out Penn State on the Saturday night, this past Saturday. But they are not as good in net. Cale Morris is having a tough start to the year. I think his save percentage is 901 right now. He's not playing as well as he has. They've been better offensively than they historically are, but they just have not seemed to be able to put it all together, really. So I think going to Notre Dame in the first weekend of the year, while they've still been trying to figure things out, might be a benefit to Michigan in terms of the time to play them.
Especially you struggling at the back end. Michigan could use teams that struggle at the back end.
It's a weird Jeff Jackson roster. Yeah, it definitely is.
Oh, yeah. Because they're usually very, very defensive-minded.
Right. And it looks like where the most of the skill this year is on the offense. And the goalie's not as strong as it was in the past. Could be a thing where their defensemen are a little bit weaker, and so the goalie's not getting as much help also. I think another really good question while we have you here is, so we've seen, you know, 2.5 years of Mel. Where do you think that they still have progress to be made to make it to the program that he wants to be?
I think there's a lot of progress to be made just in terms of, like, the players on the roster. He's, in a lot of ways, still working with guys that were starting to come in when Red was recruiting them. And then his first class, like, his first real class last year was 10 guys that nobody had ever really heard of and had been committed to him at Michigan Tech and sort of followed him around. So at this point, he's just starting to bring in, like, his classes and his guys and be able to run the things he wants to run. So I think in the second half of this year, as they settle in, and next year, we'll really start to see, like, what Mel Pearson wants to do, and then we can make judgments about whether or not that's, like, the direction the program should be heading or if it's going the right way.
Interesting.
And he should have a cornerstone of a goalie anyway. I mean, you wouldn't think that Mann is going anywhere this year because he wasn't drafted, I don't believe.
No, he wasn't.
No.
So, and he still has 2 years of eligibility left. And, I don't know, starting with a goalie with a save percentage over 930 is not
Well, it's interesting because they're also bringing in Eric Portillo.
Sure.
Who was drafted by Buffalo. And did really well in Sweden, is doing pretty well in the USHL now.
He will also be in the World Juniors.
He's going to be in the World Juniors.
So if you're looking for another team to watch, check out Sweden, at least on the back end.
Yeah. So I think that they're going to have good goaltending inevitably, right? Like between one of those two guys, if for some reason Mann falters, like Bertillo will be there. So I think that that's not going to be an issue for the next couple of years.
And they're also bringing in a pretty good class offensively. Kent Johnson's one of the best scorers in the BCHL right now, so he should be able to help them out a little bit, although they also thought Emil Orvel was going to do that, and he hasn't. So who's really to say?
Are you kind of surprised they haven't played Orvel more?
Not really. Mel was pretty unimpressed with his skating early on, and Mel likes his teams to be good skating. Like, if he's going to play a guy, he's going to want to know that he can keep up and go up and down. And I think Orvel's just taken some time to settle in. He's had a weird career with being at RPI and then transferring and everything. So maybe we'll see him more in the second half, but I don't think he's been exceptional. I would rather see Nick Granowitz over him at this point.
Interesting.
I think with the overagers who do really well in junior, like, it's kind of a hit or miss thing. So, you know, he was sixth in the USHL in scoring, but he was also one of the older players in the league. So that's, I think, where you're seeing some of that, you know.
The other guy, and Anthony and I talk about this a lot, and we have for a couple of years, is like being able to bring in young freshmen and develop them and, be around for when they had that big leap. And so our guy this year that we've kind of wanted to see opportunities has been Eric Ciccolini, because he's one of the only really young players coming in, and he's gotten a bit of ice time. Do you have a take on him or thoughts that you've seen from him over the course of the year?
Yeah, I wasn't overly impressed with him early on, but I think he's settled in and he started to sort of find his role. I think he's playing a little bit more, at least feels like he is. I wish they would publish ice time, but it feels like he's playing a little bit more. He got his first goal in Wisconsin and he's looked much better lately. Mel really likes him, and I think he's a guy that the second half will be good for. Yeah,
I think that kind of covers it. I don't really have any other questions. Do you have any, Dave?
No, I think we touched on most of the things that we had prepped for. The last thing I think that we talked about, and this was kind of like a Michigan hockey Twitter thing that was brought up, was who's Michigan's player of the decade, which is kind of an interesting time to, not time, but like an interesting decade to look back on, because if you had gone in the previous decade and you looked at from like 2000 to 2009, I mean, you could have sat here and debated any number of guys. And it's not like they haven't had decent players this year, but a lot of them have been sort of one and dones. And maybe some of their better players were from earlier in the decade. And so, Bailey, you have the list pulled up, I think, right?
I do,
Michigan Hockey tweeted out.
So the options are Tony Calderon, Joseph Ciccone, JT Comfer, Kyle Connor, Andrew Kopp, Phil DiGiuseppe, Michael Downing, Luke Glendening, Carl Hagelin, Quinn Hughes, Sean Hunwick, Zach Hyman, Dylan Larkin, Cooper Marody, Tyler Mott, Boo Nevis, Josh Norris, Jacob Truba, Zach Wierenski, and David Wahlberg.
That's a lot of names.
There are some really good NHL players on that list.
Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you, you had a reaction to one of them that was...
I did. I like Joseph Ciccone a lot. I wrote a long story on him last year. I thought he was perfectly fine in his 4 years, and I hope he has a successful NHL career, but I think putting him on the list of player of the decade is ridiculous. He was a perfectly solid defenseman. He did some good things, but like he was kind of just fine. Like,
my favorite thing about Ciccone was actually his World Junior performance. So they brought him along, and he was like, when he made the team, I was like, what? And then, well, honestly, the first couple games, he was just kind of a spare. And as the tournament went along, he got a bigger and bigger role until he was basically the number three defenseman in the medal round. And like, it showed a lot of really good like growth within the tournament. And tournament hockey's different than like regular season hockey, whereas like he made a really good, found himself a really good role. Like Matsko like put him to really good use, and it was, that was like actually like the most memorable thing about Ciccone to me. Not to downplay his Michigan career, because I thought he was an excellent partner for Quinn Hughes last year.
He's more responsible.
Yes.
Definitely more responsible. I actually wrote about him at World Juniors last year, and I wrote that long feature on him, and I talked about Matsko, and he said he thought he was one of their best defensemen in that tournament and was like blown away by what he brought. So that was certainly a good thing that he did.
Yeah. For me the player of the decade, like, now there were a lot of really good players, but it has to be Sean Hunwick for me.
Especially if you're talking about more than 1 year.
Right, and also the biggest impact on the program. So I think that, you know, well, Truba was here for 2 years, Wierenski was here for 2 years, and they were both outstanding.
Truba was here for 1 year.
Was it only one?
Yeah.
Oh, my bad.
That's all right.
Felt like two.
Wierenski was here for two.
Yeah, Merrill was here for two, but he's not on that list,
Merrill's
right?
Merrill was here for three.
Oh, my gosh, man. I can't even keep any of this straight.
You're getting old, Anthony.
I'm definitely getting old. but no, for Hunwick, for me, it was just the impact he had, like being able to step in the Big Chill when he did. You know, leading the team to the brink of a national title, just being a fan favorite also, like, I think for player of the decade kind of thing, I think that kind of plays into it. And, you know, it's an underdog thing, right?
He almost single-handedly won that North Dakota game.
He did single-handedly win that North Dakota game.
And then even he kept this was going to die in a couple of years, but he kept the NCAA's tournament streak alive for another year or two. Because if you remember, Brian Hogan got hurt and like the last home season, or last home series of like the 2010 season, and he stepped in and willed them to the tournament because they were a 7 seed, which was the lowest Michigan had been in hockey in the CCHA,
right? They won at Michigan State, right?
They won at Michigan State. I think they won at Western, and then they beat a really high-end Miami team in the semis, and then beat Northern Michigan, I believe, in the finals, and then like made the NCAA tournament, and actually probably should have beaten Miami to go to the Frozen Four if it wasn't for the Kevin Lynch goal that was waved off. But I think you're right, because like you said, you have the biggest win, and he had a longevity of like 2 or 3 years. Because the other guy that jumped off that list to me was Carl Hagelin, but Hagelin played the majority of his career earlier. Like, he was a part of the Porter Kolarik team, and then the next couple teams after that were in the previous decade.
Right.
So he had like one good year, but if you're going off one good year, like, I mean, it's got to be Kyle Connor, right?
Yeah.
Like,
what do you think?
Yeah, I would say if you're going off one good year, it's Kyle Connor. But overall, I would agree about Sean Hunwick. Obviously, I didn't see him. I've only been following the team the last year and a half. But from what I've read, from what I've heard, it has to be Sean Hunwick.
Yeah.
I think best player, Connor, Wierenski, or Truba for me. But, like, player of the decade for me, it's definitely Sean Hunwick. Like, he's a legend, you know. He is. No, seriously, he's a legend.
Yep. So. No, I agree. All right, well, I think that's probably going to do it for us. This was probably the last MGO blog audio podcast, original content, I should guess, of this year. So we want to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy Holidays. And we have only had 3 hockey casts this season. It's been a long football year, and maybe not the most enjoyable hockey season so far, but we'll plan to be back in the winter for at least a few more. And Bailey, if you'd like to join us in the future, I'm pretty sure that you have a pretty much open invitation at this point.
Well, maybe I'll be back.
Yes, we loved having you. It was great. It was different, and it was a really good thing. So I was really happy to have you.
It was fun to be here.
Yeah, so thank you. And Anthony, don't worry, I will find a way to feed your cats this weekend.
Yes, and you know that I live in town, right? Like, I'm not going anywhere. This has been Michigan HockeyCast 2.3. I am Anthony Ciotti with David Nasternak and Bailey Johnson. Everybody have a great holiday.